News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
It is. 7 minutes after 8 o'clock on FM Talk 106.5 with Dan and Dalton. Tuesday morning means Quinn Hillier.
That's exactly right. Quinn Hillier from the Washington Examiner. Also, you can read his work at quinnhillier.com. And the trilogy, the Mad Jones trilogy. Quinn, where can folks pick that up?
You can order it on Amazon. Or, good news, is it is being recombined back into the single book that it was originally written as. And sometime in the new year, you can get the entire book rather than break it down into three.
Okay. All right. That's awesome. We'll have to, with that being around the holidays, Quinn, we'll have to get a couple copies here, maybe get your signature on them so we can give it out to some listeners. That'd be great.
That would be awesome.
Okay. Very cool. So we have a case right now in the Supreme Court. A lot of folks are talking about this on the national level because it could have huge implications for voting nationwide, and that is the case that Merrill versus Milligan that was argued exactly a week ago from today. I think they started the argument on Tuesday of last week, and basically the state stands accused of racial gerrymandering and violating the Voting Rights Act. But the defendants in this case, which would be John Merrill's team and the rest of the Alabama legal experts, are saying, hey, we're not supposed to draw the lines based on race, but how can you say that it's a requirement that we draw these congressional lines based on race? I kind of explain this, Quinn, because it's all a little bit confusing.
Well, the reason it's confusing is both because the Voting Rights Act does have two semi-contradictory sentences, and because the Supreme Court has taken those and made it unbelievably contradictory, so that it the Supreme Court, not the actual law, has said that you absolutely cannot make race the predominant factor in drawing district lines. But on the other hand, if you have too low a percentage of one particular race, you have to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you fix something where you happen to have too few people of one particular race at the same time that you're not allowed to make race the predominant factor? That is the question that has been confusing people, state legislatures, for 30 years now, because the Supreme Court has made such a mishmash of it. So that's where we stood going into Alabama, and I'll stop there because I don't want to get too wordy. So where do you want to go next with it?
Well, the on Capital Journal with Todd Stacey this weekend, he actually got from both sides. So he had AG Steve Marshall on, and he also had the legal director of ACLU Alabama, Tish Falk. And she explained what she was seeing with this case. She said, I think that looking at the court, it's clear there's a dividing line asking the question, do we still need to center a discussion about racial makeup, or have we evolved to a place where that's no longer relevant? And she said she believes race, she said, if you follow the state's argument that you need race neutrality, you're always going to end up with something that has the impact of impairing the opportunity for black voters to select candidates of choice. She basically says Alabama is not ready yet to go race neutral, that you have to draw these lines with race in mind, which, you know, if they did that, I feel like they would, the Alabama legislature would be, you know, hounded for making race a central factor here. Like you said, it's all very confusing.
And, okay, so this is where I have trouble, because I've been doing this stuff for 30 years. This is where I have trouble not going ballistic for multiple reasons. Number one, because the actual direct language in the Voting Rights Act says nothing in this act shall be construed to require equal proportional representation for any group. It says that, and I slightly paraphrase because I don't have the language right in front of me, but it absolutely says nothing shall be construed to read that. So what it's saying is if you happen to have X amount of faith Catholics in the state. You don't have to have that same percentage of Catholics in the in the congressional delegation.
Okay.
You do not have to do that. What you have to do is use race-neutral criteria in order to draw the districts. You need to draw the districts. It doesn't say you have to do race-neutral. What it says is districts need to be drawn on ordinary, traditional criteria that are neutral, such as existing county lines, geographic features such as mountain ranges or rivers, compactness. You don't want a district that stretches, you know, with a tiny little sliver that stretches from Birmingham all the way down to Mobile or to Grand Bay. Okay, so you have these neutral criteria, and that's how you should apply them, rather than say, okay, we're going to go get this black neighborhood here in Mobile and that black neighborhood over in Dothan and find some way to connect them.
Right.
Okay. The second thing that makes me furious about what she said is when she said Alabama's not ready. These people still live in the 1960s and 1970s. The actual voting results are just the opposite. We live in Mobile, Alabama. For the last five elections, Mobile has elected a mayor of a different skin color than the majority of voters. In 2005 and 2009, Mobile still had a white majority, but it elected black Democrat Sam Jones as mayor. By 2013, Mobile had a black majority, which has kept growing, and in three straight elections with a black majority, we elected a white Republican, Sandy Stimson, as mayor. If people only voted on racial lines, Sam Jones couldn't have won twice, and then Sandy Stimson could not have won three times. The same thing in the 2010 Democratic primary. Black Democrat Congressman Archer Davis won 40% of the white vote in the Democratic primary, but white Democrat, what was his name, Sparks, won a vast majority of the black Democratic vote, and therefore Sparks won the nomination, even though he was white and the majority of the Democratic voters were black. So, you know, you want to tell me that Alabama still votes entirely on racial lines, and I'm going to call BS on it.
Yeah.
You're tying it to the Los Angeles situation, Quinn, with the L.A. Council president who has now resigned that position, but not her council seat, I guess. What's that connection?
Well, the connection is a moral and ethical one. What was the council president and two other councilmen and the labor leader, what topic were they discussing during that hour-long conversation that got them in trouble? They were talking about redistricting.
Mm-hmm.
And what got them in trouble was they were saying explicitly, in very crude terms, how to slice and dice the districts along racial lines. You know, how many districts should be Hispanic or Latino versus how many should be black? And they didn't really discuss the white.
Right.
But they were discussing how many Latino and how many black. And so as they did that, they started saying racist stuff about other races or about other sub-ethnicities like Waxahachans, who are a sub-ethnicity of Latino. They're from a certain region in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And not only were they talking about redistricting, but the very fact that redistricting is assumed by so many people to involve race put them in that racial mindset. If you're slicing and dicing by race, you look at everything through the lens of race, and then you start to figure out which race gets what slice of the pie.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, you start seeing rivalries between the races rather than seeing everybody in their common humanity and looking at other, you know, more neutral, more obvious criteria like what neighborhood do you live in?
It's
exactly that. the reason, the moral and ethical reason why what the challengers want to do in Alabama and what the challengers want to do in Louisiana to create this perfect proportion between the racial population and the racial delegation to Congress, the reason that that's immoral and unethical is it makes you start thinking along racial lines, just like these Latino city councilmen in Los Angeles were. And when you do that, you create discord, you create rivalries where they wouldn't otherwise exist.
Yeah, that is so well said, Quinn. And you know, it's making a lot of assumptions about who and what each race should vote for. And even, take into account some of the things that have been said, even by Biden. Remember, he went on that radio show, The Breakfast Club, and said, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black, right?
Yep.
And it's belittling almost. They say, if you're this color, you must vote this way or you're a race traitor. It's like, I thought the Democrats were the party who weren't racist, right? The Republicans are the true racists, but the Democrats, and they're normally white Democrats, are making a lot of assumptions about who should vote for what instead of just winning with ideas.
Well, that's right. And the reason that this is what's so sick about it, they cite the Voting Rights Act, the language in it that says the protected class, meaning racial minorities, usually meaning black Americans, must have, and they're talking about equal access, not equal results, but they say must have equal access, equal opportunity to elect the candidates of their choice. And they interpret candidates of their choice to mean candidates of their race. Now, that's not what the language says. That's not what choice means. But that's how they have redefined it. And when they say that a black voter's choice is automatically going to be a black congressman, forgetting everything else, forgetting geography, forgetting ideology. What if you have a black conservative and a white liberal, and the black voter is liberal? Then the candidate of his choice would be the white, not the black, and
right,
vice versa. The point is that it is a racist assumption to say that the candidate of your choice has to be the candidate of your race. Yet that's what the Democrats are doing now, and frankly, it makes me sick.
One more question before we go to the break, and then we want to move on to a different topic. But Quinn, what would you have a conservative court, right, of course, in the Supreme Court, so we have a feeling that they will rule in Alabama's favor, or at least I have a feeling they will. But if they don't, what kind of ramifications do you think this would have on the nation?
Well, it will make the entire nation go back even more to reconsider district lines. You will have challenges to district lines that have already been settled all over the nation, and you'll have all of this tied up in court for the next 4, 6, maybe even 8 years.
Ooh.
And it will be devastating. Let me add one other thing as to why this is so absurd. Alabama has had, within 2 percentage points, the same percentage of black populations in the last about 30 years. It hasn't changed. The Alabama district setup has remained pretty much unchanged for 30 years. It has gone through the Justice Department, including Barack Obama's Justice Department, for 30 years. It has gone through the courts for 30 years. It has always been approved. Now, they barely changed the district lines. The population hasn't changed, and they say that what has already been approved as constitutional for 30 years suddenly is unconstitutional. How can that be? Common sense says that if it's constitutional before, it's constitution now. The Constitution doesn't change.
Yeah, it's one, I guess you would say now, former Democrat has had it with the party and is inviting other moderate Democrats to jump the wall, too. Yeah, we'll talk about that on the way. Quinn Hillier, QuinnHillier.com, and the Washington Examiner with Dan and Dalton this morning on Mobile Mornings. Morning from Dan and Dalton. Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. It is 826 at Quinn Hillier from QuinnHillier.com and the Washington Examiner on the line. Any reaction to Tulsi Gabbard leaving the Democratic Party? This, I guess, was this morning on a statement on her YouTube channel. Quinn, what do you think?
She's a very interesting character. She is quite liberal on some things, I think economics. She's very much against this social woke agenda, looking at everything through race and sexuality. And she's really weird on foreign policy. She's very sort of anti-use of troops in general, but she's always also very pro-Putin. So she doesn't know where she fits. I don't know where she fits, but because she's so anti-woke, she clearly has sided with the Democratic Party.
Any other Democrats that might do that, Quinn? They might say, this is just too much.
There might be some down the line if Democrats get wiped out in these coming elections, but it won't be for the reasons that Tulsi Gabbard is, because again, Tulsi's quite liberal on economics and some other things. The ones that would switch would be the remaining Democrats representing moderate districts that vote close to 50-50 on most presidential races. If they get wiped out this year because they're associated with Biden and Schumer and Pelosi and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, then they might try to think, okay, I cannot be associated with those liberals anymore. If I need to come back, I need to be in another party.
If I want to win in this district, I've got to change my stripes a little bit.
Yeah, and that even happened last night, the Ohio congressional debate. You had Vance. No, this must have been the gubernatorial. Wherever Tim Ryan, he's running for, Ryan?
Senate against Vance.
Okay,
and
yeah.
Tim
so he
Ryan Senate, yeah.
And they had a debate, and Tim Ryan, who has not had Biden out stumping for him, I don't think he's invited him. He was asked last night, point blank, "Do you think Biden should run?" And he said, "No, I don't think Biden should run in 2024." And he mentioned some of the other older politicians. He even mentioned Trump there. He said, "Biden, Trump, there needs to be a whole new generation." He almost did the whole swamp speech that Trump gave so many times going into 2016. But the main reason behind that, Biden doesn't seem to be helping very many election chances for the Democrats around the country.
No, Biden is dragging down Democrats across the country. Trump is dragging down Republicans across the country because the left hates Trump so much that is one of the only two things that's really motivating their voters to turn out, is because they keep seeing Trump associated with the Republican Party and it scares them. But vice versa, Republicans and swing voters hate Biden, and so they say, his policies have put us into a ditch. We've got to turn out and vote against Biden.
Does anybody like anybody?
Interesting anti thing.
Is there anybody that the public actually likes? It's like their dislike for candidates or politicians that seems to drive the voting more than anything.
Well, that's what's driving the voting now, and there's nobody that's really been able to attract both sides. I don't think there are many Democrats that actually dislike what they see of Tim Scott, the Republican senator from South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
But there are not a lot of people like that sort of people on the other side can at least live with.
Quinn, going to have to wrap it up. QuinnHillier.com, also the Washington Examiner. Thanks for your time. It's 8:30 with Dan and Dalton on FM Talk 106.5.
Thank you, Kane. 8:35, FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. Coming to the texts, 251-343-0106. This segment brought to you by Tobias and Comer Law, local law firm. It's been doing work for decades here in Mobile, helping the folks of Mobile and Baldwin counties. And if you ask nicely and you come from the surrounding areas, I'm sure they'll make that work too. But they're local. Don't get it twisted. And we're in October. So October, November, December, lots of football and lots of holidays lined up, starting with Halloween coming up. You got Veterans Day, Thanksgiving, Christmas. And that means a lot of different parties and a lot of different opportunities where drinking or drugs could possibly be involved. Let me make it easy for you. Don't drive. If you drink, if you do any drugs, just don't do it. There's way too many other options out there for you to put yourself in the situation where you could have your life changed just in an instant or worse, change someone else's life by running into a vehicle or a person who's out there. We've seen it happen time and time again. We have those stories seemingly every morning right here on Mobile Mornings. And also, don't let your friends behind the wheel if they're under the influence of drugs or alcohol. There's just way too much access to technology in our area with Uber and Lyft and some of these other services. Also, remember to wear your seatbelt. It's your best defense against impaired drivers. You can find those tips and a whole lot more at TobiasComerLaw.com. And if you are unfortunately involved in an accident that involves a drunk or a driver under the influence of drugs, reach out to TobiasComerLaw.com. They have all the information there where you can get in touch with them. Also, free consultations 24/7 at 251-432-5001, 251-432-5001, TobiasComerLaw.com.
837 FM Talk 106.5. One of the things that's got people on the text line buzzing a little bit is your story earlier today about recruiting for the military service and Army in particular, not meaning its goals are really getting close.
We had a great discussion about this. Was that about 3 months ago, 4 months ago?
Maybe a little bit less, but
the writing was on the wall.
Yes.
At that point.
Yeah.
And we weren't just talking Army then.
No.
We were talking Marines,
yes.
Navy. Every service was having issues getting people to sign up. And now that fiscal year has ended, and by the way, I'm sure there's some, genius reason why the fiscal year is separate from the 12 months, and I'm sure I sound like an idiot for even bringing this up. Can't we line these two up? Can't we have a fiscal year that goes from January to December?
I was told the reason, and I forgot it. So years ago, I asked the same question as a young smart aleck, and somebody said, no, because A, B, and C. I said, okay. I don't remember what A, B, and C are. But again, that's where the text line comes in.
Exactly. So the fiscal year wraps
up. Can we line them up?
Just line them up. Come on. Fiscal year ended September 30th, and by that time, the Army had only been, they'd only reached 75% of their recruitment goal.
They had a hustle at the end to get to there.
Yeah, but they still fell 15,000 soldiers short of the 60,000 target. And kind of like Alabama having trouble bringing in and keeping good teachers, so they lower the standards.
Right.
And you might not have as good of teachers, but at least you fill those pantsuits.
You got people people are in the classrooms.
People are there. It's kind of similar with the Army. And it's really the stats for what percentage of military age males, or you include females, what percentage of them are actually fit enough mentally or physically to join the active duty. It's embarrassing. And Russia's having the same situation right now. They're having the same issues where a lot of Russians have gotten soft and just aren't ready to serve. You've got a lot of folks who are conscripted to serve on behalf of Russia.
Yeah, and you can see that in the battles with Ukraine, because Ukrainians are ready to go.
Yeah,
they're fighting. They're fighting for something, and seem to already. They didn't soften up like the Russians to that point. They were ready when the war happened.
So with that in mind, there's a lot going on internationally, and it'd probably be best if we did have a fighting force that's ready to roll. And it seems to be the case right now. It might not be the case in several years if they keep having these recruiting issues. So a lot of this came up during a press conference with Army Secretary Christine Wormuth and the Army Chief of Staff General James McConville. They said that they have this program, we've discussed it in the past actually as well, for struggling recruits. It's a 90-day program of academic or fitness instruction to help recruits improve to the point where they can meet the military standards. Right now, they're only doing that at Fort Jackson. They said they haven't decided yet whether to expand it to three other locations, but they're thinking that could add up to 10,000 potential recruits into the Army's next class. Remember, they were 15,000 short this last fiscal year. And it's not just the Army. The Army National Guard and the Air National Guard also failed to meet their recruitment goals. That would affect us when we have hurricanes, wildfires,
right.
Or if they are pressed into service, if that becomes what's necessary. And then for the other branches of the active duty services, they hit their recruiting goals, but they had to dig into their pools of delayed entry applicants, which I'm not exactly sure how that works. Are those just like, is that your backup quarterback, your third string quarterback?
Kind of sounds like it is.
They might not be the number one soldier out there, but they're available, so you mm-hmm. bring them in. But that could hurt them in the future as they begin this next recruiting year. So back to that presser, and we had several texts this morning. Paul's text here said, a family member of mine is retiring that has been an Army officer for 20-plus years. It's all about wokeness. This family member of Paul's says that leadership is the worst that he has seen. Well, that actually came up during this presser with the Army Secretary Christine Wormuth and the Chief of Staff, General McConville. Here's what Wormuth had to say when asked about the Army being woke.
And one more thing, Haley, I would emphasize is I think more broadly in terms of, you know, soldiers coming from marginalized communities or, you know, demographics that are not widely represented in the Army, that's part of why we've got to emphasize positive command climates and inclusion. You know, we get criticized, frankly, sometimes for being woke. I'm not sure what woke means. I think woke means a lot of different things to different people. But first of all, I would say if woke means, you know, we are not focused on war fighting, we are not focused on readiness, that doesn't reflect what I see at installations all around the country or overseas when I go and visit. But I think, you know, we do have a wide range of soldiers in our Army, and we've got to make them all feel included. And that's why a lot of our diversity, equity, and inclusion programs are important.
So that was her answer when directly asked about the wokeness of the Army. That doesn't answer for the perception, though.
No. And but she said, as I go around and I go to the bases, that this is what I see, as opposed to the narrative that we've been hearing recently about the woke military.
And, of course, she wouldn't come out and say, yeah, I agree, we're way too woke, and that we need to dial it back. But is she correct in that they are, she said, we have such a variety of we have such diversity.
Yeah, do we though?
Yeah, right. are they making it easier for everyone? I think it's coming at the expense of the actual warriors that we have in this country. Mm-hmm. White, black, brown, whatever color you are, some guys are just born with it. And I think that because they're trying to get, you know, show how diverse they are, that's coming at the expense of getting your actual warriors to enlist and fight on behalf of the nation rather than joining some private crew that makes their way over to Ukraine or wherever they may be.
Yeah, and remember too, Dalton, the motivation of people like that drove them to the military after 9/11. Mm-hmm. I mean, so there's 20 years ago, so many young people were like, I've got to do this. And if they didn't do it immediately, they planned to, at the point maybe after college graduation, or they might have been in high school at the time, but they joined the military because they saw the need. Mm-hmm. And their patriotism was at its highest level. And this country's patriotism as well was at a very high level after the attacks on 9/11, when we suddenly realized, wow, this could be gone in a flash. Mm-hmm. Like the Twin Towers going down, that was such an image that we never thought we would see in our lifetime. And it that motivation found those people that you're talking about.
Yeah, and you know, I was saying the other day as I was having a conversation with my family that most of the graduating high school seniors now were born like during or after Katrina. Mm. So that's the kind of world that they've been living in. They 3 years after 9/11.
Right.
And I think a couple factors. So you had 9/11, that's why a lot of people joined. But since then, there's been, you know, a pushback against both fighting in Afghanistan and Iraq. And you have people saying we shouldn't be involved in Ukraine and Russia. And regardless of how you feel, one side or the other, you can't say that the country is as united behind the military as we were after 9/11.
No.
We're divided, completely divided. And on top of that, looking at the job market, is it worth it? A lot of people join the military because of the benefits, right? Have those benefits kept up with the free market, you know, for people that are hiring a job down the street where your biggest worry is driving to work and back every morning rather than actually getting out and fighting? Have they been able to keep up financially?
Benefits, right. And also, keep this in mind, too, when you're talking about those who are maybe not fit for this military, for being in the military. Also, I think that there are some reclamation projects in the military. There are people that maybe entered and they weren't fit for it, and it turned out they were coached up, if you want to say, and became good at what they, you know, at, the military can change the life of a young person. I would say young man, but now young person. It can be the discipline that they need that they weren't getting, that they were underachieving because they weren't around any discipline. The military can actually turn somebody and transform them into a warrior.
They give them that.
Yep. They give them what they didn't have.
Exactly.
So again, when we're worried about are misfits going in the military, consider the military part of their job is to transform anyone into a greater of who they are.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, there are a lot of people being let out of jail, basically with no cash bail, or you see them even get convicted for some of these awful crimes and they're still let out early. Why don't we just, you know, put them in the military? That's my personal opinion. If you're going to let people who are without a doubt bad people, instead of letting them immediately back onto the streets without a job, without anything that they had going in.
They don't have anything. Yeah.
Sign them up.
They don't have anything else, right?
And we have a million texts from this conversation. We'll get to those right after the break here at 251-343-0106. I know we have a lot of military and former military that listen to us right here on FM Talk 106.5. And that segues into a great reminder with Veterans Day on the way, that November is our Veterans Month right here on FM Talk 106.5. And I know Sean Sullivan with Midday Mobile has already lined up some fantastic interviews. We'll also be out there by the Civic Center for the Veterans Day Parade. Mobile Mornings will be out there again next month before the parade with some snacks, some breakfast before you head out and have that good time. So just a reminder, with Veterans Day on the way, that we will be doing that once again this year. 848 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings, and we're coming right back.
Dan and Dalton at phone line 251-343-0106-2 if you want to call. Oh, that's fine. And those texts, you're right. I can't even count them all now. They're all over the place. Dan Brandon, Dalton Orwig, Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5. And Jeff Ford's on the way a little after 9.
Next, Kane, 853, FM Talk 106.5. Hey, it's time for the Gulf Coast's largest industrial reverse trade show. Sponsored by Partners for Environmental Progress. That's coming up a week from Thursday, October 20th, at Fort Whiting. You'll be able to speak face-to-face with decision-makers and buyers from 40 major manufacturing companies. Shipbuilders will be there, health providers, construction, engineering firms, government agencies. If that interests you, to purchase tickets or to get more information, go to pepmobile.org, pepmobile.org. Go out to the PEP Industrial Reverse Trade Show October 20th at Fort Whiting Auditorium, 1 to 4:30 p.m.
I don't know if Fort Whiting is an underused facility in Mobile. Have you ever been there?
I've been there several times.
I love that place.
Yeah.
I think that
Little Black Dress with Ronald McDonald House.
That's right.
And then for Veterans Day, they have the not service, but they normally do their Veteran of the Year thing there. Sean will be there again this year.
Yeah,
at Fort Whiting.
I love Fort Whiting. I guess it was 20 years ago or so that they refurbished it, but a great place to go. On the text line, this speaks to, well, I'll just read it. You'll figure it out. Boot camp, it's from CB Carl. Boot camp saved my life, and the CBs gave me a life. I was running down dead-end streets in New Orleans, and that was my only way out. CB Carl. So the military, again, he was a misfit,
yeah,
right? He admits it, and he says they came and I joined them, and good thing I did.
I'm glad you did too, CB Carl. Yeah. One of my favorite people out there, for sure.
Yeah.
Will, I think he's talking about the diversity thing here, as mentioned by the Army Secretary Christine Warmoth. He said anyone serving will tell you different, that they're, you know, not being woke, I guess. Terry said, let's stop using the military as a political and social experiment, and the leadership is going to toe the party line. Sean says, when I joined the military in the late 90s, nobody cared if I felt included. Yeah, they were probably doing their best to get you out of there, weren't they, Sean? Dell says, the Army doesn't conform to you. You conform to the Army.
Exactly.
Terry said, I can't recommend young people serve anymore. And, well, My brother, he is in. There's no getting out for him now, but I have certainly had that thought cross my mind as well, that I'm worried about, you know, what the powers that be will decide to do with him. But he, on the other hand, is ready.
Yeah.
Ready for whatever brings, whatever comes. Will said the military has always been diverse. Yeah, that's the, like, are they just now deciding that, hey, look what happened all of a sudden. We're a diverse military. No. You've had people of all colors and for years, for centuries, and now they're trying to make sure that everybody feels included, which is ironically what's keeping some people from joining. Sean said, I think people have figured out they're not fighting for the nation. They're fighting for Raytheon and Boeing's stock prices. BA says the country was more pro-military after the first Top Gun movie than they are right now. Dan says, I don't know if it's still the same way, but when I went to Ukraine in 05, every adult male was required to do military service for 2 years, no exceptions. That sounds like Israel and some of these other countries with forced, where you have to serve.
It sounds accurate when you look at the fighting nature of the people of Ukraine.
Yeah, for sure. Paperboy says, half the people in my basic class were to go to jail or join the military, and that was in 1999. And finally, Monty says, unless it was already mentioned, let us not forget about the mandated COVID shot as a deterrent to military enrollment. And that actually came up in part of the reasoning behind the National Guard failing to meet their recruitment goals, because they fell, let's see, the Army Guard short about 6,000 soldiers for recruiting, the Air Guard short about 3,000 guardsmen, but they said things could get worse as the Army Guard stands to lose nearly 14,000 more troops over COVID vaccination policies. They haven't been kicked out just yet, but that's on the way. 14,000 more troops when they were already 6,000 short of their goal for this last fiscal year.
That's a good point. All right, on Jeff's show on the way, Dalton, do you realize what the lineup looks like?
It's a good-looking lineup.
Yeah, Brian Bradley, he's with Media Research, former U.S.
Representative,
yeah, Parker Griffith. You don't want to miss that. He's at 10:35 today.
I wonder if he'll talk about Herschel at all. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, he will. Yeah, he will. Also, 1819 News, Craig Monker is going to be a guest as well. So that's some of what Jeff's got
on the way. And everyone's favorite history teacher, Rusty Glover, former state senator, coming on. So that'll be a good one also.
Right, if you, Jeff Porsche. You're a one-time student of Rusty. You can listen for him at about 11:05.
11 o'clock, yeah. Hey, also remember, we gave away another pair of tickets this morning to see Tab Benoit and the Dirty Dozen Brass Band at the show Sunday night at the Mobile Civic Center Theater. You can buy your tickets at Ticketmaster.com, or if you want to press your luck, we'll be giving away another pair tomorrow and another pair on Thursday. That's Tab Benoit and the Dirty Dozen Brass Band Sunday at the Mobile Civic Center Theater.
8:59, Dan and Dalton. See you tomorrow beginning at 6 a.m.